He is the most feared and powerful warrior. A ninja who breaks from ancient tradition and explodes onto America. His soul possesses the body of an innocent woman and transforms her into a lethal assassin.
I want to help her!
Only a ninja can destroy a ninja.
Her only hope is Yamada, the master ninja, who has been sent to destroy him. Where Revenge of the Ninja left off, Ninja 3 begins. An epic struggle of superhuman strength and supernatural forces. Ninja 3, the domination.
Well, that's about our entire 2 hour showtime. So thanks everybody for joining us and have a great day.
It was a good show. Thanks, Doc.
Welcome everybody to episode 57 of Schlockernaut, where we travel to the edge of the cinematic universe to watch and discuss all types of films, to include the third installment of the Canon Ninja series to feature Sho Kasugi as a completely different character again. You can check out Steve52.com for previous episodes and links to support the podcast. I'm Doc. I'm joined by my spirit guide, Steve. And now, on to the show.
I want to take a little bit of, what is it called? Offense to the fact that it says that this is where Revenge of the Ninja leaves off.
Because yeah, none of these movies are connected in any way, except for the fact that Sho Kasugi's in them.
Right. If you're worried that if you're missing anything by not watching number one and number two first, do not worry. You're fine.
That's what's funny. It's like, okay, how unprofessional are we? Because we did Breaking 2.
Right.
Not Breaking 1. And then we did Ninja 3, The Domination, which I don't understand the title at all. Maybe you could explain it to me.
He dominated Lucinda Dickey.
Sure. After he exploded all over America.
Yeah, exactly. And with a bunch of European sirens in the background.
Yeah, right? It sounded like somebody was really working over the meat section in there.
Here, I wonder if that... Let me see if my stock soundboard might have something that's like the same thing. There, like foghorn here.
That's I think I could make that vehicle starting sound though.
Here's the ninja throwing a Chinese star.
There was a lot of that in this movie though. I'll tell you what,
it's good.
All right. Dude, a ninja star took down an entire helicopter. a ninja star thrown by somebody's socked foot.
Thrown by a foot.
All right, anyway, let's get to it, man.
Okay. What are we doing?
Sponsor first?
What are we doing, Ninja 3?
We're going to do Ninja 3, released. The release date of that was September 14th of 1984, so that means this film is a Virgo.
Oh, nice.
it's 92 action-packed minutes is what it says on IMDb. Filmed basically in the Phoenix area of Arizona. It was available on Hulu for a minute, but I couldn't find it anymore. Did you have an issue with that?
Dude, it got pulled from Hulu when I was 4 minutes into the movie. 4 minutes.
You're joking me,
nope.
Right?
Nope, 4 minutes.
How does that happen?
I watched the first 4 minutes, and then I wanted to cut the trailer, because I was like, okay, well, let me do the trailer, and I paused it.
They must have known, like, hey, Steve from Schlockernaut is watching it for the show, so let's go ahead and pull this, because we don't want to compete against those fellas.
Yeah, I went back the next day to continue, and it was completely gone. So I ended up having to watch it on a streaming site that it looked like I was watching it through like a fish aquarium. Like, it was so blurry.
Like somebody slathered Vaseline on your eyeballs.
Yeah, dude, it was
bad. Now watch the movie and enjoy it.
Yeah. So yeah, good luck finding it now.
Well, good news is I have the Shout Factory DVD.
So you can watch it whenever you want.
I had the pleasure of watching it several times. Once with audio commentary with director Sam Furstenberg and stunt coordinator Stephen Lambert.
And I think Sho Kasugi did a lot of the fight choreography, right?
Yes, and Stephen Lambert.
Okay, got it.
And you're going to be surprised to see how much he actually had to do with this film.
Okay.
A lot. So like I said, the DVD, the Shout Factory DVD, let's see what it has on the back. It's got a special features, commentary, and a theatrical trailer, so it's kind of bare bones, but not too bad. No making of featurette or anything. But what's cool is on the inside of the DVD cover, they have international trailer or international posters for the movie, and the Italian one, I believe it's called what do they call it, Trancers, and looks nothing like Lucinda Dickey at all, and she's almost completely naked, holding a throbbing sword.
Oh, sexualized Italian artwork.
Yep. Nice. So good stuff, man. You ready to play Doc or not?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. He has the skills, but she has the spirit.
Is that IMDb?
That's me.
Oh, good one.
All right. He's the ultimate killer. She's the perfect weapon.
IMDb?
Correct.
All right.
The power of ninja compels her.
Doc?
Correct.
Good one.
She's a supernatural super ninja.
Doc?
Yeah.
They kind of tapered off at the end a little.
Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. So you didn't hear it?
No. I heard it. I just mean the...
you're saying the quality.
The quality of the clip tapered a bit. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just trying to fill up the show with writing. Nice. The director of this movie is Sam Furstenberg. We have talked about his movie Breaking 2. He also did Revenge of the Ninja, American Ninja, and I think he did Enter the Ninja.
I'd have to look that up, but I'll believe you.
I believe they said... I'll talk about it later. Excuse me. Writer of the movie was James R. Silk. He did The Barbarians.
Nice.
Revenge of the Ninja, King Solomon's Mines. By the way, he was an art director on Sam Peckinpah movies, so he loved violent action.
That's cool.
So they say. So we got a little bit of that. Produced by Golan and Globus. Obviously, it's a canon film. Menahem Golan began his career as a boom operator for Roger Corman.
Neat.
Pretty cool info. Cast starring the legendary Sho Kosugi, Lucinda Dickey, David Chung, and James Hong.
Yep.
And let's see, there's somebody else in there I did not mention.
Jordan Bennett, I think, was Billy.
Jordan Bennett, correct. Yep. And David Chung, I believe, played the first ninja that we see in the movie. Stunt coordinator Stephen Lambert, he was an actor. He did They Call Me Bruce, Time Cop, L.A. Confidential. He's got 126 credits to include Total Recall, Lone Wolf, McQuaid, Tough Turf.
Nice. I want to see that.
Dave's picks?
No, that was an Aaron pick, and I've seen it. It's good.
Yeah, Inner Space.
I like that.
He basically deserves a Schlocker Not Achievement Medal for all this stuff.
Dude, They Call Me Bruce is a real good one, too, if you haven't seen it.
Absolutely, I have seen that. That's what's that guy's name? The villain in that movie? Shona?
No. You're thinking of, that's the dragon one.
Last Dragon.
The Last Dragon, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, cool.
All right, fake sponsor?
Fake sponsor it up.
Go for it.
You made me lose it. You go for it.
My fake sponsor?
I'm always going to go first. Why is that?
No. Just being polite. All right, I'll go. My fake sponsor is Sifu Jack Soderbergh's CDF Academy. That is where I learned all of my ninja skills.
Oh, is that still in business?
Yeah, he is. Oh, last I heard he is.
Where is that located at, do you know?
Last I saw it was Rainbow and Westcliff, but Danny said he saw it down on like the Charleston and Antelope or Charleston and Jones area.
Okay, make sure you wear your protective goggles because he will spit in your face. That's happening. My fake sponsor is V8 Vegetable Juice. It's basically used for sexy time product placement in this ninja movie, so there's that.
Yeah. Oh, you know, I had the V8 commercial queued too. Do you want me to find it?
Absolutely.
All right, talk while I find it. Explain why V8 is sexual while I find it.
Don't even worry about it. So, this one starts off, basically, the studio, just so you know, Canon Films, they were looking for something different. So they were inspired by and decided to basically rip off elements of Poltergeist and The Exorcist.
Mission not quite accomplished, but I see where they're going with that.
You can see where they had some... I say inspiration, I guess.
Lynn thought I was watching different movies because when she was walking through, it was like first it was a cop movie, then it was like a horror movie, then it was like a ninja movie. You know, it was like one after the other.
Isn't this like typical Hollywood, though? Like speaking in circles, like we want something completely different. So take a ninja movie and add Exorcist and Poltergeist to
right,
it. Like,
yeah.
Don't they say that's how they pitch films? Like, this is going to be Fast and the Furious with a hurricane and a crime, call it the Hurricane Heist.
Right, it's Sharknado, but input
with crocodiles, gators.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So anyway, they basically just took from different elements of types of films that make a lot of money and then stole from them.
Yep.
So this, like we said earlier, this is the third part of the Canon Ninja trilogy. Enter Revenge in this one, without any cohesive story throughout any of them.
Right. Right. Should I just play the V8 commercial instead of the spoiler?
Sure.
All right, here's our spoiler.
Just gotta have a treat, oh, but you shouldn't eat. Wow, I could have had a V8. Snacking the whole night through, oh, what that does to you. Wow, I could have had a V8.
Yeah, that's enough of that. Spoiler warning. Spoiler warning finished.
Yeah, we're going to spoil the shit out of this movie, yep. So there you go. Really weird how the ninja is introduced into this movie. He's in a sedan driving through the desert.
Right. The beginning of this movie, like when it transitions to the golf course and everything, is the most non-ninja. It's the most non-ninja thing I've ever seen.
When you think ninja, you think like, dark uniform ninja gi, nighttime sneaking around. Not literally driving a sedan through the desert in a white suit and getting out and walking into a cave.
Yeah.
And finding a weapons cache that lights up from the inside.
Yeah, and for me, I don't know if it was my copy or what, but it was super hard to see what was going on. It was like bad lighting throughout.
That was your copy.
Was that my copy?
Not that bad.
Okay.
Yeah, that's really not that bad.
Okay.
Basically, David Chung, who plays the black ninja at the beginning of the movie... let me make sure I'm correct on that, though. Yeah. I had IMDb up, and then we had a computer problem.
Wasn't Shokusuke the... No, David Chung was the black ninja. You're right.
Hang on here. I just want to make sure.
I got
pretty
it.
Pretty sure I just had some computer... Yeah, I'm not getting anything at all. So, yeah, that's going to... So, anyway, inside the cache of weapons, is you see a shuriken, which are throwing stars, correct?
Shuriken.
Ninja toe, do you know what that is?
Those are the climbing things?
Sword.
The ninja toe is a sword?
Ninja toe. Ninja hyphen toe is a sword.
Okay.
I mean, I know you think because we're talking about a toe.
Yeah.
A ninja toe, that it would be the climbing stuff. But I had those figured out later. And then it cuts to a bunch of like stuntmen with model level arm candy are getting out to play the front nine of a golf course. So it cuts from him going to the cave to a bunch of tough guys with hot chicks playing golf.
Yeah, like they're playing golf in three-piece suits and briefcases, so I'm not really sure. It wasn't golf attire, and you don't get any background on... I think what they're saying is...
Why he's trying to kill
right,
them.
Right, they're important people is the gist of it.
And so while it shows that, it cuts back and forth to the guy in the cave who was in the white suit. Now, even though his name and character is called the Black Ninja, he gets like an olive green ninja gi and puts that on.
Yeah, this is the golf course scene is broad daylight, and it's a very weird setting for a ninja attack.
It is David Chang. He is a Korean actor who was known for Repo Man and Missing in Action 2, where he played a Vietnamese person.
Nice.
I assume so.
David Chung.
Chang.
Really?
Is it Chang or Chung?
I wrote down Chung, but I
have Chung and Chang written down, so I apologize. Right. I don't have IMDb. Can you check?
Yep, David Chung, right here.
Okay, perfect. So, he does run under the cave quite skillfully, like a ninja would do. And then it cuts back to the guys playing golf. And he basically, the way he reveals himself, he doesn't like start ninja stealthy style killing people. He basically grabs their ball and crushes it right in front of them to antagonize them.
Yep.
And then starts kicking their ass.
Again, not the ninjas I'm used to, yeah.
Right. There's a lot that goes on with this opening scene. It is bananas and unrealistic, and I thought it was quite fun to watch.
It's the whole movie, dude, this opening scene.
Yeah. There's hand-to-hand with armed guards. He throws his throwing stars to shuriken at everybody, hits people in their face, in their arms, blows a... basically a dart into the barrel of a gun, causing it to misfire and
totally
blow the guy
awesome.
Backwards.
Totally awesome.
He disembowels people. It's just ridiculous. There's one scene that sticks out in particular where he chases after the guy and the girl trying to flee in the golf cart, and he literally picks it up off the ground, and the people are like a foot in front of him because it's a golf cart, and the guy's, you know, telling the girl, get away, run. When he could have done the same thing, but he's got his foot on the gas, like hoping that's going to work.
Yeah, like it's some kind of a race car, and that's, dude, you can walk faster than that golf cart.
Did you notice, though, that the black greenish ninja actually kills the girl by slicing her bicep?
I didn't, no.
Yeah, he kills her. He basically takes the sword and like rubs it across her bicep and she dies.
Yeah, there's a lot of nonsense, but there's also a lot of fun to be had in this scene. I think it's about the first 14 minutes of the movie, if I timed it right, is this whole intro.
It's 15 minutes of action. Yeah.
And it's most of my notes. Yeah.
So anyway, it's been the most unstealthy ninja type activity where literally everybody knows they're there. The security guards call the cops, who literally respond immediately and then drive all batshit crazy all over the golf course. Like, I hope this golf course was like going out of business, or because that green was destroyed.
Dude, they scrambled a chopper. They had a helicopter out there right away.
This was shot on a golf course in Phoenix, by the way. I'd love to find out, so maybe one day we can do a Schlockernot field trip out there.
That'd be great.
Do a scene-for-scene reconstruction. I'd even try and climb a palm tree.
Dude, that palm tree had mad scorpions in it, dude. I do not recommend That was the first thing I thought of, because he climbs a palm tree at one point using, that's why I thought you said the ninja toe. He had the spikes on his inner ankle, or the insole of his foot. And yep. He climbs up a palm tree to single-handedly take out a helicopter.
Which happened to be hovering a foot above the same palm tree with the ninja.
Right, right.
Like, you know, if you know there's a deadly ninja on the ground, you probably should stay away from trees.
Yeah, but he does take down the chopper. And all I could think of when he was climbing through those, because I know those palm trees are notorious for, like, just being scorpion condominiums. Like, all those little shingles just house scorpions. And I just kept thinking, like, oh, dude, he is in the middle of a nest of scorpions. Like I couldn't believe, dude.
Like, could you imagine he gets off and they're just all over him? Oh. They're all over his body.
Yeah.
So anyway, Sam Furstenberg basically gave the stunt coordinator, Steve Lambert, carte blanche to create any crazy idea he wanted to. So I'm sure, like, they pitched, like, how about a 20-minute ninja attack? A buddy of mine owns a golf course in Phoenix. We can use it. We'll just have the ninja attacking random bad guys on the golf course for 20 minutes. Right.
Can we get it? Can we get a helicopter? Can we get golf carts? Like, what can we get?
Yeah, exactly. It's like a Andy Sidaris meeting.
Right.
Like,
right.
Whatever we can get, we're gonna. So there is production value. There is a lot of shit happening that makes the movie look more expensive than it probably actually was.
Yeah, and I think I read somewhere too that they pretty much used anything they could that was just laying around on the location.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Like. I'll say this, how many people were thrown into dumpsters in this movie? Right. Those are pretty cheap to come by, and they're fun to watch somebody get thrown into. So.
Right.
So, I mean, the black ninja, green ninja jumps on the roof of patrol cars, stabbing cops inside with his sword like a can opener. He's killing motorcycle cops with shuriken. He rappels from one car onto the tree that he climbed up to get to the helicopter. And actually, I guess the force of him spinning on the rappel rope or whatever, on the whatever they call those things, literally forces a car into a lake. And then he still, as he's wrapping around the tree, he kicks a motorcycle cop into the lake.
It's a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah. Oh, my God, dude. Those things, the spiked claws are called a shiko, by the
way. Nice. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I always wanted those, too. I thought they were super cool.
And so, basically, he jumps on the skid, takes one guy out, throws another guy off, and then shurikens with his toe into a guy's forehead, causing the helicopter to crash, but he's already fallen into the water. That was an explosion of cheese, dude. That was literally like a firecracker as the helicopter flew over the ridge of the hill.
Do you see that, like, there's three guys originally in the helicopter, and only one of them was wearing the earmuffs, like, the, you know, the rest of them didn't have any ear things on or anything.
So they wouldn't be able to hear what was going on the ground or anything?
Yeah.
Was that an RC chopper that flew over that hillside, too?
I want to go back and look now, but who knows?
It looked like an RC helicopter with, like, a little M80 explosion.
That's great, dude.
That was a weak explosion, but anyway. Stephen Lambert has noted, and he did during the commentary, that literally there was no CGI or cables used because those effects were too expensive. And I, the only reply I had to the screen was, yeah, no shit.
Right. You didn't need to clarify, but thank you.
But impressively, that fall from that helicopter into the water was a 40-foot jump into 8 feet of water.
Dude. Yeah.
Yeah. This guy gave his all in this movie, man.
Yeah.
So I will not be saying too much negative about it. Yeah. Just because to hear these guys talk about the making of this movie, like literally sometimes it's hard for me to get up before noon and these guys are doing this shit for your entertainment. So we should all be a little bit appreciative.
Right. And the beginning of this movie it's fun as shit. It's just a good opening to the movie.
Yeah. Maybe we should have just had Lambert do stunts the entire time.
It probably would have been more fun than the rest of the movie. I can tell you that. Okay.
The Black Ninja is now in the water. And there are literally a gajillion cops now looking for this dude. And, one sharp-eyed guy notices a piece of bamboo snorkeling around.
Scooby-Dooing around in the water.
By the way, that's called a fukiya.
The straw?
Fukiya. It's a blowgun that is also used as a snorkel device.
And you did some research on this one. I like this.
Fukiya.
Nice.
So anyway, he's immediately spotted by a cop. So again, huge ninja fail on his
right,
part.
Right.
Can you answer this question for me, though? How did he have a dart in the gun while he was also breathing through the apparatus?
Is it possible to store the dart in your cheek at like chew
like
and then
chaw,
stuff it in?
Like a skull pouch.
Right, then stuff it in when necessary?
Because as soon as the cop spots him from the shore, he gets a dart to the face.
If it would have been me, I would have breathed and the dart would have gone right down my throat. And that would have been
right,
the end of Steve the Ninja is done. Yeah.
And then your body floats to the top.
Yep.
But so anyway, he gets out of the water. The cops completely surround him. This drives me nuts in movies, man.
And they're shooting from all angles.
It's like...
it's so bad.
It's so ridiculous. Just imagine a soul ninja in the middle of a circle of 100 cops who are literally shooting him repeatedly with every caliber of weapon that a police force would have. Shotgun, 9mm, 45. I think somebody even
there's
like,
an AR.
A rock at him.
There's an AR
there's
in there.
There's ARs. So 223. Everything is shooting this guy. And he feigns death.
But
and so
they're
they
all,
got him.
Now remember, they're all facing each other, shooting at him.
Literally like a circle, just
a
shooting
circle.
Into
and the And there's even circle. There's even police officers behind police officers shooting at him from behind them.
Like different levels of this circle of firepower.
It's so bad.
So he feigns death. And then they move in to do something with him. I don't know, but maybe cuff him
were,
or something.
Yeah,
but
they were checking to see if he was alive after he got shot 75 times.
So what does he do? He kicks him in the face.
Yeah, not dead yet. One of the cops had a cigar in his mouth while he was shooting him. I think he was a shotgun
wasn't
guy.
Wasn't that Al's neighbor?
Yeah, dude. He just had a cigar hanging out of it. He's pumping a shotgun from the hip, and he's got a dirty cigar just like...
Ugh. Well, it's interesting during this scene because they do engage in some character development because various police officers around that are shooting the ninja, they focus for a good 5 to 10 seconds on their face.
Right.
So you can see them... You know, in action mode, pumping rounds into this, because that's going to be important later.
Right.
So, you know, little movie knowledge. If they're showing their face, you know, they have, you know, a shot of random 5-10 stunt guys, and then they focus on the guy with the cigar that looks like Al's neighbor from the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Probably going to be important later.
I think we called that Chekhov's gun, right? If you're going to put it in the scene, you're going to use it.
So... when I say important, understand I'm doing air quotes while I'm doing that.
You just mean maybe like lightly addressed later.
Yes. It's going to be brushed over. Yeah. I thought this was kind of cool, though, because he throws the smoke grenade, right? And there's a pretty cool little sequence where it shows him point of view, like 360, using every... ninja tool in his bag to dispatch cops.
The utility belt.
He is throwing spikes, shuriken, hitting people with swords, smoke bombs, I think there was like one of those little things you put in your mouth when you blow in it and it comes out and rolls back and forth.
Yeah.
Party favor.
Wait. I think I have a sound for that. Where is it? It's on my new, on the new thing. Oh, yeah. It's a slide.
If it takes that long to get
one of those. One of those.
Yeah. If it takes too long to get to it, then it ruins the joke.
No, too long. They're so stock.
So
such stock sounds.
Literally everything. And at this point, once there's all this chaos, a bunch of dead people everywhere, they've determined the ninja has disappeared, so they spread out to find him again. But fun fact, he wasn't disappeared. He was hiding in the dirt.
Ninja camouflage.
You can't hide in water with a fucking snorkel, but in plain view, he pulls like a David Copperfield or David Blaine and like buries himself in the dirt.
I was thinking like Rambo when he's hiding in the mud wall behind the guy.
Or even Predator. When he
covers himself Predator too. Good call.
Yeah. So I thought that was a pretty cool shot of him like emerging from the dirt.
Yeah, it was cool.
Because you know they had to bury him for him to come out of that.
That's exactly what I thought. Like, man, how much dirt is in your crack when you come up out of that, dude?
In all the crevices.
It's nasty.
And then it transitions to someone like rigging different spikes to not Asian-looking boots and climbing a power pole. And that was a terrible Zadie song. You probably didn't cut it, but it sucked.
Which one?
It the song they were playing in the background while she was climbing the power pole.
Ooh, that's not Body Shop. That's in the gym,
no,
right? Yeah. No, I don't.
Just think a that. Fun fact, everybody. Every 80s song in this movie sucked.
Right. <It's>
terrible. Terrible.
Let me make sure I have Body Shop queued up for later.
This is not.
Sorry.
Oh, don't start it now.
I was just making sure I had it, but I do. Production value.
The lady climbing the pole is not the Black Ninja. It is Canon Super Beauty and resident go-to girl, Lucinda Dickey.
Right, from Breaking 2 and Breaking 1, apparently.
Yeah. And I think that angle she was in totally accentuated her backside for some reason.
Yeah, dude. And I like when there's music, even though the music sucked, I like when there's music playing and you think it's like the score of the soundtrack, but then it's actually in the movie because they did that here. She was actually playing it on like a boombox and... When she's done climbing that pole, she's working on, I believe, the electrical pole or the telephone pole, I think was her job. Mm-hmm. When she comes back down, she turns off the music and it turns it off in the film. And I think that's a fun...
Or like when they have them in the headset or something like that. Right. You know, they pull it out and the sound changes of it.
I think that's fun.
Where it goes
fun.
From the soundtrack to like in the background.
Uh-huh. I like that. I think that's cool.
Do you think, though, that Canon utilized these angles of her like climbing down from the bottom, showing her ass or whatever? Do you think they did that to kind of exploit her... body?
Of course, it's Canon films, dude. Yeah.
Dude, even in like thick coveralls, she is smoking hot.
Yeah, she's toned. I mean, she's obviously a very, very fit, athletic, muscular.
Fun fact: the climber in that scene was Steve Lambert.
Dude. It was a dude. It was a dude's bet. Yeah, he's wearing coveralls.
He was talking about, yeah, you like that ass? Yeah. That's my ass.
I'm looking at the Body Shop. I'm looking at the Body Shop video right now.
Dude, just so you know, Steve Lambert did almost every single stunt from the previous action sequence on the golf course. He was the Black Ninja. He was pretty much every dying cop who died in a crazy way. He drove the car into the lake. He was the helo pilot. He was the ninja on top of the car. He was the ninja climbing the tree. The ninja hanging from the chopper. He was the motorcycle cop that crashed.
That's great, dude.
I'm pretty sure it's safe to say he's a total badass, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, literally, I stubbed my toe walking to get, you know, a hunk of cheese out of the refrigerator, and I'm
on your way to get a V8.
I'm out for the rest of the day. When do you hear about some of the injuries he had just in the fight scene in the house?
Okay.
It's ridiculous, dude. And did you know that Lucinda Dickey was the second choice for this role?
No, I thought that was the go-to. Who was first?
They didn't say, but the other one had a scheduling conflict, so they had to go with her.
Wow. Okay.
So I think that kind of changed the course for Canon and her career, for the better, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, dude, she's awesome, dude. She's the go-to. You watch Breaking, she's fun. You watch this, she's fun. She pulls it off. I think she's a good pick.
Did you know that they said, too, that this was her first Canon film, but the other two came out first? Breaking and Breaking 2 came out first because they wanted to get in on that, you know, because that was the thing at the time, breakdance.
They were trying to get out into the theaters. I think they were trying to beat. They were trying to get before Beat Street. I think was what it was. They were trying to get out before the Beat Street movie.
Yep. Yeah. So they were filmed in a weird order. First film.
Yeah.
Right. She plays Christy. That's her name. She climbs to the top of the pole, shows off her flowing locks. And then she, at the top, is able to see that there's an injured person down below. So she climbs down and finally finds him when he grabs her and scares the shit out of her, basically.
Well,
which I've always wondered how that happens. Like, you're in a desert. You can see literally everywhere around you. How does somebody sneak up on you?
Dude, also, she fought him off better than, like, all the cops and the bodyguards and the golf course. Like, she did a better job scrapping with him.
She like, literally hip tosses him.
Yeah. Yeah, she throws him and, yeah.
But somehow he hypnotizes her back or something. That wasn't really actually clear to me what was going on. And he kind of gazes in her eyes, and she's wearing an inordinate amount of guy liner for some reason.
Got to Asian him up. That. Yeah.
An Asian what?
They got to Asian him up a little more. They wanted the real, like, yeah.
And he says something to her in Japanese, and she basically is handed his sword, and then he collapses, right? And she kind of shared a vision of his death. She kind of sees what he went through when he's dying, which signifies something, I don't know. But then it cuts to the police station, and Christy is being treated basically as a hostile witness by a detective. But, I mean, also we kind of notice later that she stole evidence from the crime scene, too.
Yeah.
How did she get to the police station but also get the sword home?
Yeah, I thought that too on my second watch. I was like, because even the cop asked her, like, you didn't see a gun or a knife or anything? And she's like, no. So I didn't know if maybe she was kind of mind controlled at that point when he gave her the sword. But it didn't make sense.
Yeah, but I mean, like, okay, so she calls in that she's found a dead ninja. They show up, hey, this is the guy who killed a bunch of police police over at the golf course. Cool. Well, he gave me the sword so I can take it home, right? Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. I didn't understand that either.
I like the scene where the detective is questioning Christy because he ends up giving her more information.
Yeah, than she gave him, right?
Than she gives him, which is perfect for the audience because he's like, this ninja killed a very important scientist or Goomba at the golf course. I don't know.
Yeah.
It was funny because he offers – Billy comes in, Patrolman Billy, who's going to be a love interest later, comes in and offers her a Coke. And remember what she said?
No.
I don't use soft drinks.
I don't use soft drinks?
Yeah.
I wish I'd have cut that.
I can't believe you didn't. Really, I think on this one, you maybe had a preconceived notion that you weren't going to like it as much as you thought you would, so you kind of shut down.
No,
there was
no.
Some funny shit in here, dude.
No, dude, I actually I went in super pumped, like excited. It wasn't until like halfway through the movie where I was like, "Uh-oh, this isn't what I remember it." You know?
Oh, I thought it was just fine. But she goes, "He goes, would you like a Coke?" And she's like, "I don't use soft drinks."
That's good.
Like crack or heroin. So anyway, I think that's important later because the doctors claim that she's in perfect physical fitness shape. So.
And eats better than most. I remember that, too.
Yep. So,
another shitty Billy. One more shitty Billy in a movie.
Yep. This is Jordan Bennett. He's known for BJ and the Bear. I kind of enjoyed some of his unintentional comic relief.
Right, right. Yeah.
Totally unintentional.
Lynn said he looks like Steve Carell, like a weird Steve Carell.
Like a low budget?
Right. Well, younger, maybe, let's say, or something.
Sure. She kind of blows him off because he's... You can tell he's into her.
He's coming on way too strong to a lady that's there, you know, for not that purpose.
As a victim of a crime.
Yeah, he's on the job.
Not a crime, but...
A witness to or something.
To a crime, yeah. She keeps having flashbacks to the ninja death scene. And then, I think at this point, didn't he offer her a ride home or something?
Yeah.
And she kind of, like, aggressively states that she doesn't need one. So she is very off... putting the entire time. Of course, he is in creeper status mode, so I guess it's a defense mechanism for her.
Yeah, I didn't take that as her being bitchy. I took that as him going way too overboard with the come-ons.
But she's very overly specific. She's like, I don't date cops.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or people who are servers at Applebee's.
Or she has a long list.
Yeah. So I don't date long haul truck drivers.
I think that was just her way of saying, like, dude, not interested. Like, that's enough. You don't need to pursue any further. But he did.
Yeah. And it's a forced relationship that really didn't need to happen, but it also did as well.
Yeah. And that switch goes from, like, no to yes in a split second with no...
With a fight. We'll get to that here in a little bit, too. At this point, Christy arrives to her very well-decorated apartment. She basically unloads all of her stolen evidence into her apartment. And then you get some jazzercise in a room full of scantily clad women.
Yeah. With the high-waisted leotards.
In that Body Shop song.
Oh, yeah, that I have here. Because you love it so much.
2, 3, 4, kick side. 2, 3, 4, get your leg up there. Come on.
That's it.
No further questions, Your Honor.
Body Shop.
Literally, every song in this movie is terrible.
Yeah.
And very 80s specific.
It's got to just be what you can get for free or quickly at the time.
Hey, I've got a sister that wrote this song with her band. It never really got off the ground.
Right.
Dragon Force is too busy to make a song for us, so can we use the Body Shop thing?
Yeah.
Weirder, though, is now Billy is super interested in jazzercise as well.
Yeah, he just shows up, and now he's the guy in the crowd that can't hang with the chicks, right?
Yeah, because Christy, who's also works for the utility company, is also a jazzercise.
Dude, her job did not match her lifestyle. I'm not... Like her apartment and her aerobics and her job.
Very girly.
It just didn't match. I don't know why.
Why do you think they made her like a utility worker?
The only thing I could think of was climbing the pole thing, but I don't need, like, it could have been any other job.
Like, couldn't she have been, not saying women can't do that, but I'm just saying it's just really strange. Maybe they were trying to cash in on the whole flash dance and she's a welder thing.
I think you're giving them a little too much there, dude. I don't know.
No, man. Listen, they've already taken elements of Poltergeist, Exorcist. I saw Ghostbusters references in there. A lot of stuff. Why wouldn't they take from Flashdance?
My take on it is the only reason that was there was the transition between the ninja climbing the pole and her climbing the pole. That's it.
Either way.
Either way, it didn't match. I can tell you that.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it was silly. Billy uses the best pickup line ever, though.
What is it?
Did you hear that guy you found dead was a professional Japanese assassin?
Wow. Oh, really? Oh, now I'm interested.
The ladies love to hear that.
Oh, Billy.
And then, of course, this is something weird too. Like, have you ever invited a woman for coffee?
No, never.
But he does.
Is that a movie thing only, the coffee?
Yeah, hey, why don't we go out and get some coffee?
Maybe that's, you know what, maybe that's like a non-aggressive way to ask for a date. I'm not saying dinner, and I'm not saying a movie. I'm just saying, hey, let's get to know each other. Just coffee. It's more mild.
Yeah, but I don't drink coffee. I don't believe you drink coffee either. So if you invited somebody out who you knew enjoyed coffee, what would you drink?
Tea and scrumpets, what everybody drinks.
Scrumpets?
Yeah, tea and scrumpets.
They're crumpets, but...
Sure.
I mean, would I look like an immature asshole when I ordered a large glass of chocolate milk? give me a venti chocolate milk.
Give me a jar.
A hot cocoa.
A jar of your finest jelly beans. Is that what you're going to order? Would it look classy?
Would it be weird? While she's drinking her coffee, I'm eating a protein pack with like two eggs and stinky cheese and shit.
Yeah, some string cheese.
My chocolate-covered, you know, raisins when I think I'm eating healthy. Hey, it says it's a protein pack.
It's fruit in there. Yeah. No, I'm not a coffee guy, so I couldn't tell you. But I bet you that's a thing. I think that's a thing.
So anyway, she basically turns him down. I think it would have been better if he had asked her out for some sake because she is possessed by a Japanese samurai.
There you go, dude.
Probably would have gotten that date. But she turns him down. So outside the gym, basically one of the practitioners of jazzercise is being pre-sexually assaulted by a gaggle of assholes.
by these damn criminal aerobic gangs, because these dudes were all wearing the aerobic gear too. It wasn't like street toughs. It was dudes from the gym.
There's nothing that makes me feel more rapey than a good jazzercise workout.
They were wearing like leg warmers and sweatpants.
Well, look what you're wearing while I'm working out. You shouldn't be shaking that thing, that moneymaker in my face. I can't help myself.
This scene was so...
Dude. Imagine this. She walks outside of her gym. There's four or five toughies. The one guy looked like he had herpes on his mouth. Oh. The one he said, like, oh, sweetie, we'll take a shower and get to know each other. So these four or five guys are harassing a blonde chick who... They're like tossing her around, and I don't know if they're trying to rape her or rob her purse or what, because they're looking through her purse, and there's 50 people watching this. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. No help from the other 30 people that were in the same class as these guys. These guys
there
aren't
are
like street
dudes. Cops. There are females with like 50 people watching these people do this to her.
Yeah. This scene was ridiculous and aggravated me.
So she basically, Christy comes in with the after school special speech, which is like, hey, come on guys, let her go. Not like, okay, Steve, you walk outside your gym, you see that happening to a young lady. Do you say, hey, come on, guys, let her go? Or are you like, hey, man, get the fuck off her.
Right. You got to use
the
a little
fuck
bit
is
of,
wrong with you?
You got to use a little bit of verbal
you
authority.
You got to get in there and you got to really let them have it. You got to show them you're batshit crazy.
Command presence. You got to use a little command presence on that. Mm-hmm. It was dumb, though. There was such
I will
a crowd.
Your face if you don't let her go.
And still, I'm going to go back to it again. These dudes should not have been guys that were just working out with them in the jazzercise. These should have been like a gang of street toughs with mohawks and leather jackets. You know, not the same
right.
dudes
like
from the gym.
The people from Return of the Living Dead come in and do that.
Yeah.
Not people wearing.
It doesn't work.
Sweatpants and neon headbands.
Yeah, like leg warmers and a headband and a gym shorts and sweats, and it just didn't.
Well, I like it too when they had like the gym shorts over top of their
sweatpants. Yeah, dude. Yep.
Fun fact here, Billy's a terrible police officer because he just sits and watches.
He was there too, exactly. And he doesn't get mad till she does something.
So she gets in, they kind of attack her. She uses her gymkata. That was straight up gymkata.
Mm-hmm.
And she beats them all up, knocks a couple guys into a trash can, which they're always filled with the just right amount of cardboard to lessen the fall.
To get a little puff of trash, too. A little
you got to have something.
Trash,
there.
Right?
So.
And then that's when Billy jumps in and says, hey, I'm going to charge you with assault if you don't stop.
You're under arrest. Come with me. That's one way to pick up on the ladies.
So
they must swoon over that.
He wasn't going to charge the dudes that were assaulting the girls. He's going to charge the girl that defended. What?
Well, at first I thought it was a joke, like just a way to get her away from the danger and like make it look like...
I didn't take it that way, but... Maybe.
But then when he gets in the car, he's like, you know, Christy, I could have arrested you for assault. I was like, who the fuck? Do people who have any idea how the real world works write these movies?
Right, dude, exactly.
God damn it,
Yeah,
man.
It was just bad.
So they start arguing, like crazy arguing. And he pulls over to the side of the road, and he's like, get out. You can get out. Like, okay. Well, she just almost got raped and assaulted, and you're kicking her out of her car in a neighborhood
right.
she probably – I mean, it's not like you have cell phones. She's
right.
going to have to
– And so he's mad at her. He's mad at her because she still doesn't want to date him at this point, like right
because
after this
a cop.
Goes on.
Yeah.
Right.
Because he's a cop. No, it's because you're a dick.
Yeah.
You're a cowardly dick.
Right.
That's not because you're a cop. Right. You're a fucking asshole. So anyway, she starts to take a liking to him,
unexplained.
Which 80s movies have taught us, the way to a woman's heart is to treat her like shit.
It was such a weird twist, dude. And see, this is where, so I didn't remember this whole scene outside the gym, and I was like, huh, that was not that fun. And then this quick switch from they're arguing, to all of a sudden she's coming in the room naked with like a towel and dropping
Wait. My favorite part is she goes, after he screams at her, yells at her, tells her to get the hell out of the car, she's like, well, maybe I do like you. She goes, hey, I don't have any coffee at my apartment, but I do have via.
Oh, wait. Where's the... Damn it.
She doesn't even say VA. She
says via.
VI.
I was going
to
try to
play like she didn't know how
to
pronounce the product.
Oh, that's great, dude.
Viet. Viet is what she says.
Maybe Viet. the cue card was misspelled.
She's like, I do have some Viet.
Yeah.
And so next thing you know, he's in the apartment. Basically comes out of the shower with a towel wrapped around her body. Conditions are perfect, by the way. That's a sign that she's ready for mating.
Right.
And things get juicy when she douses herself in that tomato-based beverage, and they smash.
Gross.
Dude, just imagine, like, okay, if you're going to do something, don't you have to do some preparation, like put a plastic sheet on the, some Visqueen or something on the floor to prevent spillage? I mean, you go into her house, and you see there's V8 spills all over her couch. You know that this isn't her first time doing this.
This ain't her first rodeo.
I mean, she literally straddles him, sloshes her neck with Viet juice.
Viet.
And Viet. And he goes down on her. I wonder if that was the mask, maybe something else.
Oh, gross. Don't even go. Don't take this to showgirls territory. I ain't with that.
Sorry, buddy.
I saw a funny scene on, it doesn't really tie in, but it was still funny, on Curb Your Enthusiasm the other day with my wife, where Larry David's laying in bed, and his wife, I think her name's Cheryl Hines, she's just getting out of the shower, and she's coming to bed, and he kind of reaches over like he wants to fool around, and she's like, "Stop, Larry, I just took a shower." Dude, his response was, "Well, that's good for me." Why it made me laugh so hard? It was such a short little part, but I laughed so hard.
Well, that's good for me.
Well, that's good. That's good for me. like no thought about her whatsoever.
Yeah, doesn't care. Like, it's all about me. So later on, after both have been satiated, and I mean, not only did she not like him, but she let him stay over after a quick one night stand.
Yeah.
She is awoken by a bright light in the closet, and it's that ninja sword quivering with light and energy.
Yep.
And I thought that was a pretty cool little effect.
Yeah, I was okay with it.
The sword's basically like comes out of the sheath and floats down into her hands and kind of hypnotizes her a little bit. Maybe she's slightly possessed, not fully at this point, I would say.
I'd agree.
So a fun fact, the swords in this film were crafted from aluminum.
Yeah,
which is kind of rare because most of the time it would be bamboo or rubber in these types of movies. So I think finally Billy wakes up from all the racket, and he goes to check on her, and she's kind of in a trance. And that's when I notice his back is a veritable forest of hair.
It's a little bit hairy, yeah.
A little bit?
It wraps. It's like a gorilla suit. It wraps from the front to the back.
Yeah. So that's when Shokasugi has arrived at the airport, and he's got an eye patch. And that eye patch did not look like a traditional eye patch. I think it was constructed from, like, the hilt of a sword.
Yeah, it's the guard part of the handle of a samurai sword.
Right. So basically, it still has a hole in it, so he could still see.
Yeah.
I would assume, because, right?
Yeah, or store, like, tools in there or something like that.
Shokasugi, plays a character by the name of Yamada. Shokasugi was, like we said, in all three of the ninja movies. Also, Ninja Assassin. Did you ever see that one?
Not sure if I saw that one.
I think it came out in early 2000s, and it was terrific.
Was that the one that was
extremely violent ninja movie?
I think it was based off a video game, right?
No.
Really? Okay.
Not that I know of. Watch it if you haven't. It's really good. And he was in Blind Fury as well.
Okay.
69 years of age right now. Can you believe that?
80. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
And he got to start doing martial arts shows at Magic Mountain.
In the U.S.? Cool.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So at this point, Christie's experiencing even more of the flashbacks. So this is when the movie gets just kind of nonsensical, right? Fun fact, too, Sam Furstenberg, can you believe this is an antiquated way of thinking in Hollywood that we haven't seen in a minute? The director, Sam Furstenberg, believed the only way that the audience would believe that a woman could possess ninja skills like this was this, if she had the spirit of a man inside
her. Oh, my God.
He said that.
Oh, do you think he hears that now and is like, like,
I mean, it was 84. I don't know when the commentary was recorded, but that's exactly what he said. God, I thought it was kind of funny.
You know, sometimes I even hear something I've said, like, on an old show, and I'm like, why would you even say that? That's so shitty, and I wonder if he has that feeling.
Yeah, whatever, dude. I mean, it's just the way some guys think, right?
That's true. Maybe he still holds to that. I shouldn't say that. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, whatever, dude. I mean, it's antiquated thinking, right. But it's funny. Like, the only way you could ever believe a woman could have skills like that is if she was possessed by a man.
Bummer. What a bummer. Yeah.
So, hey, man. Some people are just fucking old fogies.
Yeah.
Billy at this point cancels their date. He has to handle some official police business, which I thought it was kind of weird. Because she's out working, and Billy somehow always knows exactly where she's at. Like I said, this is past the time of having before the time of cell phones. But he shows up on the street corner, and there's Christy working on some power lines
everywhere. Yeah.
Okay, got to cancel my date. Got official police business. She has a strange urge and follows him in her work truck. And I thought at the time it shows Billy running into a house, doesn't explain anything at all, and means nothing to anybody at this point.
Yes.
Am I right? It's like,
yeah.
What was that scene for?
Yeah, this is the taper off right here. This is where you get a lot of nothing.
So it has an extremely abrupt cut, and then we have Christy dancing her took us off. But then she kind of has the same this is where it gets all poltergeisty, because now she's in her apartment by herself, and there's strange noises, and there's shimmering lights. Basically, her whole apartment is being haunted. She gets hypnotized by her arcade game, Bouncer. Never heard of that one.
I looked it up. I think it's fake, yeah.
No, it's a real game. They just, it's a real game, but it never got funding to be mass produced as an arcade cabinet.
Got it. Yeah, I did look it up though.
I still think, like, wouldn't Legend of Kaje have been more appropriate in that apartment than Bouncer?
Yeah, but like just the old kung fu, the double stick kung fu game would have been cool. You know, any of them.
And did I pronounce that correctly, Kaje, or was it Cage?
I'll accept either. Yeah, I remember it. I don't know.
I love that game, dude. Yeah. Anyway. That sword of light, which kind of looked like it was a plastic sword or made out of like cardboard, like poster board that you would use for because it didn't look real. You know what I mean?
Yeah, not at all.
She kind of dances with the sword a little bit more. And now we know that she's fully possessed by an Asian ghost because they literally slanty eyes her makeup.
Yeah, they go all Peter Sellers on it, and they give her the mascara, the deep mascara.
They Asian her eyes. And I'm like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Oh, so.
Do you know, I wonder if the first choice was an Asian chick, the one that didn't get cast.
No, absolutely not.
Okay.
Are you kidding me? It's 1984.
Okay.
So they give her Asian eyes, and I say slanty eyes because you know that's exactly what they said when they made that. And she raids the weapon stash in the cave.
From the beginning of the movie, right?
So from the beginning, this weapons cache just must make tools because it's never empty.
Yeah, and it's not even that hard to find. It's kind of like a big cave right off the road, you know?
With a glowing chest inside.
Yeah, it wasn't hidden well.
So she dons the ninja uniform, which must have smelled terrible because Steve Lambert refused to wash them.
So that they'd look all grungy and crusty?
No. Wanted to go by Asian tradition. The power is in the uniform. You don't wash them.
Oh, that's new to me too. Nice.
Mm-hmm. So she walks up to the house that I now realize was the one that she followed Billy to earlier without any exposition. And there's some dude playing pool in his underwear and a cigar. And we realize it's one of the cops from the golf course earlier.
From the flashback scene, right?
Yeah. And that actor's name was John LaMotta, who is the nephew of famous boxer Jake LaMotta.
Neat.
Who was the inspiration for Raging Bull.
Neat.
And nice. John LaMotta was also the scuzzy neighbor in Alf.
A lot of Alf in this one. I like that.
No, it's the same guy. It's the same guy I was talking about earlier.
Oh, is it? It's the same actor? Yeah. Oh, cool, man.
So, no, they took every scuzzy neighbor from Alf.
Like everyone. Yeah, how many neighbors were in Alf? Yeah.
Yeah, so she roughs him up pretty good, dude. She cuts some pool balls in half. She crushes them again, which not a cool effect because you could see that it was totally
dust. Yeah,
it was like chalk. Empty. It was hollow inside and stuff. She slashes his face, which doesn't look deadly, and then throws him out the window and then leaves.
Yeah, I didn't.
Which I didn't think was like a fatal wound or anything, but he's dead.
Yeah, and I didn't have a lot of fun with that fight scene either. It was real like fake Hollywood one kick wait.
Like, he waits for her to kick him, right. Then he reacts, and then he waits for her to do something else.
Yeah, it was very 1-2, 1-2, and I kind of, Yeah, see, I remember you saying, like, I went in, I didn't feel it until now, where I was like, oh, man, like, I remembered better of this. I thought it was so action-packed and awesome, you know?
So, here is my question now. So, the Black Ninja goes to a golf course to kill guys in suits and models for no reason. Police show up to attack him to prevent him from killing more people and hurting more people. They kill him. Now the Black Ninja has got to possess somebody else's body in order to get revenge on the cops who killed him for killing innocent people or what?
Right? Maybe?
So the rest of this movie, ladies and gentlemen, is the Black Ninja spirit in Chrissy's body killing police officers who shot him at the beginning half of the film.
For committing a crime. Yeah, that's it. Yes. That's the movie.
So there you go.
Yeah, and a quiz off. Just like that.
So then we get like a quick scene of like Billy and Chrissy at the apartment. And she explains to him that she's blacking out now and she has bruises all over her body.
Right.
And just so you know, when he hugs her, it looks like she's throwing a faux animal fur.
Oh, from her shoulders,
from his hair. He's so hairy, too. Yeah.
I got a good meme from Aaron with that guy in it. Did I send that to you?
Did you really?
I didn't send that to you. Okay, I'll put it up in Slack and for the guys and everything.
So she goes to the doctor, and her official doctor's prognosis? You're fine.
She doesn't have anything wrong with her brain, and she's pretty physically fit, but she's under a lot of stress. That was the prognosis.
You're fine. The only thing abnormal is your exceptionally high level of extrasensory perception and your obsession with Japanese culture.
Right. Right.
Like, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, hey, look, I really think you're fine. You're mentally stable, but you've really got to stop studying Italian culture.
Yeah.
It's weird. You're not Italian.
Yeah, that was an odd prognosis from a medical examiner. I'll give you that.
No. So, go back to the police station now. Chrissy, with her Ghost Rider intact, spot another cop from the incident. So she, of course, tells him, but this guy, he's a slimy-looking fellow.
Yeah, he's like checking out the chicks and walking out with them.
He's got a couple of hoe bags slung under each arm, and they're going out to hit the hot tub.
Right.
Chrissy easily infiltrates the party with her ingenuity and ninja skills.
And bikini.
And tits.
Yeah.
So.
Man, I really don't. I don't like those high cut bikinis, dude. I just.
I don't mind them.
They don't do nothing for me.
Well, I mean, maybe 1984 Steve would have done something for him.
It's possible. No, but.
So anyway, basically, he's in a hot tub with two chicks, and she comes strolling in. And, like, at first they think she, like, works at the hot tub place because she walks in wearing a bathrobe. They're like, good, we needed some towels around here.
Right, right.
And so she takes her towel off, or her bathrobe off, and he's like, well, how are you? And so she starts, like, walking up to him, and the girls are like, oh, no, you're not going to kiss him. Uh-uh, not today. And she starts kissing him, and then they change her tune, like, well, I'm going to sit and watch for a second.
Yeah, it was written very poorly.
Written by a guy who's always wanted something like this to happen.
Written by a guy who's never had this happen, right?
Always wanted it to, right. And in his mind, he's got a way it's going to go down.
Right.
But
like, first they're going to be so jealous of me, but then after they see how hot I am, they're going to want to join in.
Yeah. He's literally rendered defenseless with her body. And she has a poison ring on, which didn't look like it was sharp at all. And she poisons him with the spiked ring.
Yep.
And then she slashes a girl's, chest and strangles another girl in the pool.
Yeah.
Because you can't leave it behind any witness.
Poor girls.
So this honorable ninja is now just killing anybody associated right. with the cops that killed him for killing somebody.
Yeah.
And then I should have noticed earlier, I didn't mention this, but at all of these crime scenes, Yamada is showing up to investigate.
Right. He's tracking the bad ninja. Or the right. rogue ninja, I guess I should say.
Mm-hmm. So, back at the apartment, Billy has a hard time stopping Chrissy from her CrossFit routine, which is basically a realistic scenario because I know CrossFitters and you can't get them to stop. Yeah,
it's impossible.
Or doing it. So Billy at this point says to his Asian section of his work, and they suggested that he go to an Asian exorcist.
I got a cut of that. That I do have here. Oh, you want it or no? You want me to save it?
Go ahead. No.
Listen, there's an officer in the Asiatic division. He told me there's this guy downtown the local Japanese swear by.
So you think Metro has like an Asiatic division, or is that something special for this movie?
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, Asiatic, and then they've got...
a Caucasoid? They got a Caucasoid division.
They've got them all.
All right.
They've got Aborigine section, Australian section. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. That's happening. So they do go to the Asian exorcist, and he's awesome because it's James Hong.
James Hong, dude. Yeah, when I saw that, I kind of forgot he was in there. I was like, yeah, all right. He makes everything better.
I don't know for sure if I was just really tired in my notes, but I'm pretty sure they called him John Wang.
Oh, let me see if I can find that for you.
No, that's not his name in the movie. I think the director and Steve Lambert called him John Wang. Oh, I didn't know his name was James Hong.
Oh, it sucks, dude.
I think. I was really tired, though. So I still kick myself in the ass, too, for not getting his autograph at Comic-Con years ago.
Yeah, that dude makes everything better, dude. He's just so cool. He's a great
dude,
actor.
I mean,
he's
89 character actor. Years of age, too.
Still doing things? Yeah, let me look. Let's see if he's doing
it. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Let's see. Man, he looks great, too. Oh, yeah, dude. He's got post-production. Dude, 423 credits.
I know.
Still got stuff in post-production in 2018, even. What a guy.
Yeah, super badass, man. So at this point, the exorcist chains Christy to the wall with the help of his assistant. Do you think even exorcists have like OSHA safety guidelines they have to deal with?
There's probably some type of standards, I'd guess. You got to go through a course.
Like a weekend course from some guy that flies in from the Vatican.
Yeah, you got to learn it from somewhere.
Like, listen, we do exorcisms, but your Asian exorcisms are going to be just a little bit different. So we got somebody from the Asiatic community of the Vatican to come over here and teach you this.
Yeah, this is pre-YouTube, dude. There's no, like, look up how to tutorial real quick. You got to, if you're not looking it up at the library, you got to learn it from somebody.
I don't know what he gave her in that peace pipe, in that bong, the bowl that she smoked, but it worked.
Yeah.
The ritual begins and candles flame out, kind of like in some movies today and in the past. And she does her best Reagan impersonation.
Nice.
but instead of barfing pea soup in his face, she just barfs out fucking smoke rings.
I wrote down that she gave Hong the old dicky mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. She growls and shouts Japanese obscenities in a gravelly voice. She tries to break free, but Billy prevents that from wrapping like ropes around her arms and stuff. And at this point, man, that spinning scene where she violently flipped around in her restraints.
Ooh, dude.
Oh, God.
That made me dizzy.
Listen, you start doing that to me, and I'm going to start sounding like a possessed dog, right? Because that has got to stop, like, right now.
Right, yeah, that can't continue. Whoever did that, man, wow.
Oh, God. Just imagine, like a harness around her waist, and she just flips violently around in a circle.
Yeah, it's like one of those acrobats at one of the Osho or something, where they're just violently spinning around a bar or something, and just, ooh, man. I mean, I don't know if it was the film sped up a little, maybe even, but whatever.
Not sure,
it was,
but still, I wouldn't want to do it once.
Bad, yeah.
One time would be enough. She eventually passes out from spinning, I'm sure.
Which I would have on turn two. Yeah.
The blood just went from her head to her feet, and she's out. And that's when James Hong explains to Billy that she is possessed by a black ninja and that only another ninja can destroy him.
Only a ninja can destroy a ninja.
Tagline of the movie.
Good thing Yamada's in town. So
lucky.
Lucky
no,
us,
no
right?
Explanation why he was there or how he knew what was going on.
Furstenberg explained, too, that they had a head-spinning scene, which would have completely ripped off The Exorcist. But he couldn't remember if it just looked terrible or would have given the movie an X rating.
Yeah.
But either way, it was cut out of the movie.
Yeah, I saw that, too. I was going to mention that.
So this particular scene, I remember I sent it to you last night. It was audibly creepy, and I'm almost certain that they utilized music, or at least tried to completely copy music from Diamond Galas.
Yeah, hold on. I'll pull that up.
The Litanies of Satan.
Yeah.
Did you get the clip from the background?
I don't have the clip from the movie, but I have the actual clip that you sent me. Let me.
So just so everybody knows, Diamond Galas, she has a song called The Litanies of Satan. It's like 17 minutes long. You've heard it because at my house Halloween. On Halloween I play it. And it's the creepy shit. Do you remember it when you heard it?
Oh, yeah. You want me to play it? I can play it right now.
Yeah. Just so everybody knows, this was released 2 years before the movie came out. It's jarring. It's absolutely evil sounding. And since we don't have a clip from the movie, just listen to this and listen to that scene from the movie and tell me what you think.
Okay. Let me pull it up right quick here. Okay.
Okay.
You want me to skip around a little?
Yeah. It's all the same. That's not what I heard from the
It's crazy, dude.
Yeah. So if they didn't use that music, it's really hard to hear because it's in the background of the scene, then they literally copied it completely.
Yeah.
Because that shit's creepy.
Yeah, it works really good at Halloween, man.
Yeah, just have that shit blaring outside your house. Yeah, it keeps perfect. Everybody away. Yeah. Nobody wants to come to your house. Or maybe it's just me. I don't know.
They keep now all your candy. No one wants to get your candy.
Now I'm sad. So, at this point, Yamada sneaks into the morgue with a ton of security, kicks another guy into a dumpster, bonks two security guards' head to get... Actually, they weren't the security guards. They were like the orderlies in the morgue. There was an inordinate amount of security around this morgue. Did you think so?
Yeah, he had to get through quite a bit to get to that place.
But he whips everybody's ass.
But you can tell he's not trying to kill him, so he's the good guy.
Yeah, he's just trying to knock him out or incapacitate them, I guess.
Right.
And he finds the Black Ninja's corpse in a rollout cabinet. And then you get the slightest of backstory. Basically, from a 5-second cutscene, flashback cutscene, I think we learned that the Black Ninja killed his family.
If you learned that, that's good, because I didn't.
It's basically Yamada tied up, screaming at the Black Ninja to not hurt somebody.
Okay.
And that's it.
That was so quick that I don't even think it registered on my viewing. Yeah.
Very fast. So now we're back with Christy and Billy at the precinct, and now she looks exactly like Nancy from Nightmare on Elm Street.
Yeah.
Because she's got the big gray streak through her hair now. They said they did that to make it look like she's aging, with the ninja that possessed her. So she's has his age now and wisdom.
Well, I took it as stress, but okay.
Yep, that's what they said. So now two more cops who were at the scene of the incident show up, and they're going to head to the cemetery for that cop that was killed earlier's funeral, right?
Right.
But back at Christy's apartment, the spiritual activity is heating up again. And this reminded me of the Zool scenes from Ghostbusters, because the appliances sparkle with light and move around, and smoke bellows from the closets and stuff. The set was actually rocking back and forth. That was a complete Ghostbusters homage or ripoff, however you want to look at it.
Yeah, and did you think it was weird that during the middle of that big thing, she just started mad dancing, going crazy?
Maybe that's her coping mechanism.
Well, dancing...
Like some people drink copious amounts of booze or inject heroin into their eyeballs. Whenever she's stressed out, she decides to jazzercise.
Dancing would not have been my go-to in a possession type thing. I think that only works in break-in. Like that break-in, you can get out of stuff with dancing. Ninja 3, the Domination.
Maybe she's trying to serve the ghost.
Well, I might have enjoyed that if that was the case.
Oh, boy. Can you think of a different title that would have been better than Ninja 3, the Domination?
Ninja Possession, maybe, something like that.
Yeah, I like that better.
Yeah. What was the one, the Italian one?
Trancers.
Trancers. That's just because it means nothing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ninja 3, the Possession. Well, right there, dude.
Yeah, that's even right there. That's a million
there you
times
go,
better.
Dude.
You did it. Schlockernot just made a movie
there
better.
It is. We did it.
Yeah, we're blaming, man. Mm-hmm. This Hollywood stuff is easy.
Yeah. Cookie cutter.
So then we get a poltergeist homage because she sucked into the closet.
Yeah, dude, I didn't really put all those together like you did, man. That's good.
They are hitting a lot of different marks with this movie. So
wait, they are shooting for a lot of different marks.
They're exploding all over America.
I don't know if they're hitting, but they're shooting for them.
Sure, yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Billy arrives at the cemetery, immediately sees that Christie's work van's there, and finds throwing stars inside. Ruh-roh, Raggy. this is going to be bad.
He's always wherever she is for no reason. It's so convenient.
This town is so small.
Yeah.
This town of L.A. is just so tiny.
And this just rolls us right into another daytime ninja attack. Like, this, why, man? Ninjas are supposed to be nighttime.
And stealthy.
Yeah.
So she basically climbs trees. She's jumping tree to tree like Legend of Kaje, which is why that cabinet should have been in there. I rest my case on that argument.
Okay.
And she starts peppering the gathering with arrows, basically shooting guys in the crowd of the funeral with arrows.
Yeah, it's a big police thing going on, and yeah.
She's like an Overwatch Hanzo. She never misses.
Never misses.
Never misses. And did you know one of the policemen killed in the graveyard scene was Robbie Knievel, Evel Knievel's son?
Oh, really? I've met him.
Really? Where?
His other brother, Kelly Knievel, worked at a place that I used to work at, and he got me tickets to watch him when he jumped one of his, like one of those, he's going to jump 25 buses on the strip deals.
Did he make it?
Yeah, he made it. Yeah.
God, man, those two, Evel and Robbie. I know Evel. What, did he break every bone in his body? You watch that video where he misses the jump on
Rag
the strip.
Ragdolls that shit.
Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, they told me a really, I don't know if it's been said like in the documentaries or whatever, but Kelly told us a story about his dad, like when he was going to do that fountain jump at the Caesars. Did I ever tell you that?
No.
Okay, I'm going to butcher it a little bit because it's been years since he told the story, but he was telling us all the story. And he said that his dad would call Caesars and be like, hey, we heard that Evel Knievel dude's going to jump the fountains. We want to know where and when. We want to buy tickets. And then he'd just call using like a fake accent, and he'd have like his daughter call, and he would just call all the time saying, when's that Evel Knievel guy going to jump the fountain? And then one day he calls and is like, hey, this is Evel Knievel. And they're like, where you been? We've been looking everywhere for you. We want you to jump our fountains.
Oh, wow. So he's a huckster, dude. He's a showman.
That's the story. Salesman. That's the story from his son, dude.
So you're saying if we call up
Joe Rogan, somebody, when are you going to have Schlock or not on your show?
Yeah. Yeah. Jimmy Fallon, this Schlockernot guys, when are they coming? I need tickets. I got to see these fellas ASAP.
That, dude, that's straight from the sun. He said his dad did that, just called over and over.
I believe it, dude. Yeah. I totally believe it. Because, I mean, who would think, like, we need a new show here. Well, I've got this guy, Evel Knievel, that'll jump a motorcycle over the fountains. You know, nobody would think about that. You have to put that seed in their head.
Yeah, he self-promoted that. And I also heard stories that the dude was actually kind of not cool. Like, he had a lot of stories about the guy being a total, like, misogynistic, like mean and not a nice guy, but
allegedly.
I never met him, you know, allegedly, absolutely. I never met the guy, but there are stories good, there are stories bad.
That's crazy. Still, hey, we're talking about him now, so you did something right.
I mean, dude, where would, you know, there's no Jackass or that, any of that stuff without Evel Knievel.
Well, they've admitted that too.
Right. I mean, that's just, you know, he's the guy. I mean, dude, when you
there's
were a
nobody
kid.
Nobody farting into space helmets. With the tube attached to somebody's anus without Evel Knievel.
Yeah, if you were a kid in the 80s, you knew Evel Knievel and you wanted to be Evel Knievel. Like, that's just
Did
how it is.
Did you have his toy? His
oh, yeah. Yeah, dude.
Toy where you pulled the grinder string or whatever
cord.
And it sent it down?
Yep.
Yeah,
it had the little, like he was on the thing and it would have the cape was kind of prefabbed out so it looked like it was flying behind him. Oh, yeah.
Great stuff, dude. Yep. Great stuff. So anyway... also, the tombstone, there was one of the tombstones they fought around. It had Womark on it. That's David Womark, who was the production manager of the movie.
Ooh, he put his name on a tombstone?
Mm-hmm.
It's bad mojo, dude.
Man, whatever. I don't know. I'll look him up, see if he's still alive. What
don't,
do you think?
Don't find out.
Okay. So, at this point, Stephen Lambert was doubling for Dickie in all of the graveyard action sequences. And there were a shit ton of them, but he was also doubling for Shokazugi for the more dangerous stunts that was happening.
Dude, that guy, wow.
So basically, she kicks a metric ton of asses. But it's funny because the cops are like going to the trunk of their cars and pulling out like just a shit ton of PR-24s.
I don't even know what that
Remember
is.
Remember that scene? The batons or whatever they're called?
Oh, yes, yeah.
So they're like, they have a stack of them in the trunk of the car, which I always, you know, I would assume people would take those to a funeral, right?
Yeah, and you'd carry like 30 of them everywhere you went.
In your trunk. So like one guy opens his trunk and he's just grabbing all the batons out of the trunk and handing them out to guys so they can go fight her one by one.
Which one of y'all brought the batons? Which car's got all the batons in it?
We need the baton car.
Yeah. Any of you guys have guns by chance?
No, at a funeral we leave all our guns at home. Yep. She basically runs into Yamada, who I know is here to finish the job, but it's weird because with what he explains later he has to do to finish the job, this makes no sense and it doesn't help anything.
You're correct. It didn't. I, even on my second watching, I was like, did I miss something on that? But no, I didn't. It was just not explained.
So he follows her into a vacant house because she jumps a fence, which I thought that was kind of cool. They used like a little springboard to jump over the fence. And they actually had some pretty fun combat during the scene. Yep. I thought this was kind of neat with the props and the environmental usage.
One of the better ones.
I thought that was pretty good.
Definitely.
Huh?
One of the better fights in here for sure.
And just remember this too, at this time, like a lot of Americans still weren't accustomed to ninja films and had basically never seen this type of action. I mean, yeah, they had Enter the Ninja, Revenge of the Ninja, but a lot of, you know, in order to get those kung fu movies, you had to, either really search them out or stay up till midnight and watch them on USA. Yeah.
And that's what I was into in the '80s. Like I loved the Shaw Brothers.
Yes.
The kung fu. That was my shit. And I think that was, it kind of ruined it. Well, you know, then you get the Jet Li and Jackie Chan era, which is much, much better and way more dynamic. But there was that big chunk of time in the 80s going up into the 90s where American kung fu movies were you kick, I kick, you kick, I kick, I block, you kick. It was roadhouse fighting.
It wasn't dynamic at all. They didn't use the environments. They didn't use props. They didn't use cool weaponry.
Was the problem. It was being done by the Shaw Brothers, been doing it forever, and there was some awesome kung fu movies that they could reference for any of this.
I just don't understand how anybody could be turned off by a cool like Asian action movie.
Dude.
Like, what was the turnoff? Like, it's just so much fun to watch.
The dubbing alone, dude. Watch them for just the dubbing. The bad dubbing from that era is spectacular, dude.
I remember as a kid when I first started watching those, I couldn't keep my eyes off of them. If there was one on anywhere in the house, I would just gravitate towards like a Matsu.
Stop what you're doing. Yeah.
Yep. I loved it, man.
Yeah, I don't know why more big time didn't pull from that because it was there. It was there to be had.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. But I mean, you see some of these Asian actors getting roles in these American kung fu movies and trying to show it off a little bit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I mean, could you imagine like these guys had never shot or staged anything like that before, so it's probably like anything else, you just got to learn it. Like the guys who do John Wick, they don't just one day know how to film John Wick and do the stunt coordinations and the fight choreography.
Right,
you got to learn it.
And we're talking Golden Globus here. It was make it fast, make it quick, get it done. It wasn't hey, let's research on the best martial arts choreographer from Japan and get him over here to teach a team
let's
of
get
10
a guy
guys.
Who really knows how to shoot action.
Right.
You know, so
dude, Casanova Wong, bro. Look up Casanova Wong and look at some of his fight scenes from like the Master Strikes. Outstanding.
Well, even the guy who does all the Tony Jaa fights.
I don't know who that is.
He's worked on a ton of stuff. Even the guy who did the Matrix fights. I wish I knew all these guys' names, man. I wish I had that. But the Matrix choreographer, he did a ton of stuff. And he's amazing, too.
Yeah, and that's when you started pulling out. And, you know, that's when Jackie Chan hit the scene and they started upping the level of these fight scenes. But you go to the 80s, like I said, Roadhouse, or any of these other fight, quote-unquote, fight movies, you're not getting spectacular fights. You're getting very blah.
Passable.
Yeah, very blah, very blocky, very very non-lifelike punching and kicking.
But I thought this fight in this house was a little different.
It was. This one stepped it up a little, I thought. But well, and then you're supposed to be looking at ninja on ninja action, not like some fat dude in a tank top swinging
a
pool
cue.
Yeah.
Ninja on ninja action.
Yeah. You know what I mean? This was supposed to be a higher caliber of fight because this is another ninja. He's not beating up some, you know, junkie outside of the gym or whatever.
Yeah. So that house got completely torn apart, dude. Yeah. And at some point, the black ninja kicks Yamada down a hole that he basically broke apart in the floor. And for that, Lambert was doubling for show, and he broke a vertebra in his neck.
Oh, my God. That can't be good.
Yeah, right? And he kept going. He kept working. So
that's a long-standing injury that will haunt you later, you know.
Forever. Yeah. So they're on the top floor fighting. They both hear sirens. At this point, Christy, a.k.a. the Black Ninja, jumps out of a second floor window to escape. That is actually Lambert as well. And if you watch the sequence again, which I hope you do when I let you borrow my DVD and you see it in a clear, on a clear screen, the screen to the window actually knocks Lambert off course. So he actually kind of like rubs a tree and lands wrong, and he broke his left ankle.
Oh, my. Dude, one after the other.
Yeah. So he said for the rest of the movie, he just favored his right ankle. What a tough ass dude.
That dude, he's Evel Knievel number two.
Yeah, right? So she escapes, but unfortunately Yamada is picked up by the police. Billy, who just happens to want to keep pushing this movie and story forward, shows up and interviews Yamada, and he basically tells him, like, I've been waiting for you to talk to me. I can help you. But I need you to take Christy and her sword to the temple on the hill and wait for me.
Mm-hmm.
Which... You didn't. You attacked the Black Ninja / Christy. When was this plan going to come into place? Because
why now?
The one key element that we find out that he needs is the corpse of the original Black Ninja,
which wasn't there for this fight. So what was his?
Maybe he's going to incapacitate her and take her.
Yeah, sure, okay.
That could be. Yamada's being driven to the station by a car filled with four police officers. He incapacitates them all and escape. And I'm going to say this, and I think I've said it before, inept cops in movies make the cinema world go around.
Yeah, this was chock full of them, man.
Everybody's a Keystone Cop. Nobody knows what they're doing. At this point, Billy tries to cuff Christy to take her to the temple, but she ends up fighting back. Gains consciousness basically right before she cuts him in half with her ninja sword and basically leaves. Billy chases her out of the apartment, but of course wrecks his car, inept cop style.
Sure.
So at this point, Yamada arrives at the temple and rallies the monks just in time for Christy's arrival. And they have a quick, brief battle, which none of this fight was fun to me for some reason. Some
totally
of the stuff
weak.
With the monks climbing the netting and stuff, I thought that was okay. But a lot of it was just kind of boring.
The acrobatics were fine, but the actual fight itself was not.
Right. Christy is incapacitated. I love the rudimentary 80s FX spirit ghost being transferred from Christy to the dead ninja. It looked very, it was very 80s-esque.
Like painted on the film, cartoon.
Then we have Franken Ninja.
Yep.
He's a little bit clunky, but still deadly.
Yep, nice.
And he has spiritual powers because he's able to control the monks now so that they attack Yamada.
That's the domination part maybe right there.
Sure, there it is.
Whatever.
That was a pretty cool, multi-assailant battle. But still, everybody comes at him one by one.
See, I would say that's pretty cool based on what you've seen in this movie. But if, in general, I don't think holds up to, a million other cool fight scenes around that time.
Absolutely. Yeah. I thought the fight on the netting was kind of cool, where they're, climbing on the rope ladders above and stuff like that.
Because using environment,
Yeah, using the environmental stuff. Billy discovers unconscious Christy at this point, revives her, and his first thought is to tongue her throat hole.
Yeah, because that's pretty much after every traumatic episode she's ever had, he's ready to go.
Yep.
Like every he's Billy left. In every movie.
Like, I found you, thank God. Let me check your inside of your mouth out. With my
this thumb. Is a good time to make out. Let's do this.
Oh, I thought you were going to play something there.
Oh, no. I was just saying that for Billy.
Yamada has caught up with the OGBN, the original Genji Black Ninja, and they scrap a bit on the mountain. I thought that was kind of cool, the background scenery, when they had their final face-off. That was a pretty cool spot they found in Phoenix or somewhere around
there. The background scenery was the only cool thing about that scene, about that fight, man.
You didn't like the reverse jumping footage? I thought that was fun. Where somebody would jump off something, but then they film it in reverse, so it looks like they're jumping up on top of a cliff face or whatever.
I expected more from the climax fight scene in this movie.
Yeah.
just because the beginning was so tight. Like, the beginning had so much fun in it and so much to watch and so much eye candy and so much shit going on. I think you could have saved a little bit of that for the finale, for the big
fight. You didn't like the corkscrew effect where he throws
the
smoke bomb? The
corkscrew effect I liked because it was goofy. I mean, not because it was awesome. I liked it because it was goofy.
Did it remind you at all of the death of the Wicked Witch of the West?
Oh, dude, it didn't. But now that you say it.
Because of smoke and him like going into the ground and stuff.
What a world.
So he's in the ground now, and what does he do? He makes a ninja quake.
Yeah, unexplained powers of the environment.
Yeah, and Yamada is basically joggled off a cliff, and he's clinging on for dear life, and the evil ninja now is underneath him trying to grab at his feet.
Why would you attack someone at the high ground, dude? Come on. That's Ninja 101.
You dug into, but I mean, part of it was he did just dig through the ground, so he's at the bottom of the cliff instead of the top.
Yeah, but I don't think that's the spot to do it, man. You don't attack the high ground. Come on.
Fun fact, if you do attack the high ground, you get a knife to your hand.
I mean, you're basically asking the dude to kick you in the face a bunch or possibly stab you in the top of your head with a knife. Because what can you do other than reach up for him, you know?
Which, he obliged him, though, man. So yeah, he obliged
him. That to me, man, like, I wanted something super cool for the ending of the badass ninja, and that was like worse than the guy with the pool cue. You know? Like, what? So he just reached down and stabbed him in the head as he was climbing up a rope. Like, there was no action to that. There was no like spectacular like climax. It was just kind of like that. It let me down, man. Did it let you down?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
man.
All right.
What do you do after the threat is over?
Did he make out with her?
You tongue punch each other. Right. As the guy who did it all, instead of like saying, hey, man, thanks, you sit and kiss each other as the guy who helped you walks off into the sunset.
Right. Yeah.
And the demon ninja evaporates.
Sure. And that's Ninja 3, The Domination.
And scene.
Done.
Out of all the canon ninja films, take a guess on which one was the most successful.
It's got to be this one, isn't it?
American Ninja was the most successful.
Dudikoff? Is that Michael Dudikoff on that?
I would assume his glutes were the probable reason for the success of the movie. Man.
And you know what? I like that. Well, again, I remembered liking this movie, but I also remember liking American Ninja a lot too.
All right. Well, we'll eventually, I'm sure, if Schlockernot makes it through to episode 58, we'll do it at some point.
All right. My last note on here was to. I used to think this movie was badass, bro, but now I just think it's either just bad or ass. Like, you can't put it together anymore.
I'm glad I own it, dude. It has its own unique charm.
Absolutely, and, dude. Yeah, absolutely. It's still a fun movie, and especially for the beginning, you got to see that first 15 minutes if nothing else is worth watching.
Absolutely. I think I have Revenge of the Ninja and this one. I don't have Enter the Ninja, so I need to pick that one up.
I've watched them all. I just, for some reason, I remember this one as a standout, but it could have just been that beginning, you know.
I think Revenge of the Ninja is probably way better than this one.
Well, let's watch it in the next 6 months or something.
Okay.
Next time we need a ninja movie, we'll toy that with that.
We'll go right to that one. Absolutely.
Okay. We've got some good news, and I've got some bad news.
All right, I put that ring in the middle this time. Middle volume. Was that any better?
I like it. It was great. Okay. It was perfect. Right.
That way, Dave and you can be happy.
You can't make either one of us happy.
I know.
Excuse me.
All right, what's your good news?
I'm going to say the cartoonish fight scenes, particularly the golf scene at the beginning.
Yeah.
They're totally unrealistic, but zany and full of outlandish action.
Absolutely. So. Look up that gif of that dude shooting the blow dart into the barrel of the gun. It's fun stuff.
It's hilarious. Man.
Fun stuff, yeah. For me, the good news was just we got to watch another canon film. I can revisit canon films. We could have a show called Canon Podcast and just do canon films, and I'd still be happy.
They're always just... There is something about their formula, man, that just makes me so happy.
I love thinking how rushed it was, but you still get entertainment out of it, you know?
Oh, yeah, man. They wanted to bring you entertainment. They weren't, you know, trying to make movies just to make money. They were trying to entertain you and make money.
Right.
Yeah.
Bad news?
They probably should have explained more of Yamada's backstory. Mm-hmm. There was literally just like that 10-second shot, and that's not near enough to explain why he's there and why he's doing what he's doing.
Yeah, why
or
he
why
doing?
Even by, for that matter, what the bad ninja's doing, the black ninja.
Yeah, this was strictly a fight movie. There was no, they didn't give you anything else. For me, well, obviously the music sucked, but I thought that was a gimme. and this could be my copy too, you tell me, but for me, the sound went from way too loud to way too soft, especially in the speaking scenes. And I remember that in other canon movies that we've watched where I would constantly have to turn the volume up and down based on what scene was happening.
I did not recognize that at all, and so I wore headphones.
Okay.
That
could have been my copy then. Okay, yeah. Then I'll go with the music. That's why I did both.
Cool, man.
All right, you got a Schlock star rating?
Sure, I'm going to say 3 out of 100 guys hilariously kicked into open dumpsters containing a shit ton of cardboard.
Dumpster fodder. That's what we got going
on. Dude, it was so funny. I don't know. I mean, just like if there's a dumpster around, somebody's getting their ass kicked.
Yeah, someone's going in.
It's happening. You're going in.
Right. If there's a pool at like a party and a bunch of people are drinking, someone's getting pushed into that pool. It's happening.
Absolutely.
For me, I'm going to give it a V8. How about that? See? Well, number. Wrap it right back.
I like it, too.
Life lesson learned?
If you don't know any ass... whether it's male or female, it's fine to gaze at, just as long as you don't know.
Yeah. If you think it's Lucinda Dickey and she's climbing up a pole, you're okay to stare at that.
Huh. It doesn't matter. It doesn't an ass matter, and ass, whatever.
It doesn't matter.
As long as you don't know, just enjoy it.
Great. My life lesson is ninjas are either waterproof or possibly self-drying, because after he jumped out of that pond with the blowgun, he was completely dry, his suit and his
absolutely.
Body.
Well, I mean,
dry.
Dude, that's part of a ninja ability. You have to dry off quickly.
Self-drying.
To get into your next battle.
Got it.
Cool.
Schlockernaut protocol requires a quiz off. May the best human moron win.
All right, hit me up.
What is the most overtly ridiculous action scene in this film?
Overtly ridiculous. Overtly ridiculous. I mean, there's a lot to choose from here, buddy. I mean, I would say him spinning into the dirt was pretty, like, that made me laugh pretty good.
I'm going to say the fight with the goons, because there was 40 people there. That's true. Not one person would help at all. And I cannot believe that would be exactly how that whole thing went down.
Yeah, that... You're right, man. I mean, that ridiculous can be taken in a bunch of different ways, so I was thinking more lines of the action.
It's like, why even have those people out there watching it? Because they did nothing to help the movie forward.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
If you had to pay all those extras $100 a day to sit out there for... Imagine Billy and her walking out there with the four guys attacking the woman. Billy gets knocked out immediately because he's the more viable threat to the men, and then she fights him off. Well, that makes more sense than paying 40 people $100 a day to sit out there and just go, boo, get him.
You nailed it perfectly there. He is law enforcement. If anything, he should have tried to stop it, and then maybe he gets knocked out and she finishes it, and then he looks at her as like, wow, she's a real badass. She did what I couldn't do, but he needs to be the one that initiates and tries at that point.
Right.
And that could have been how they bonded after that, right? Like, he tried to help. She sees he's a good guy. And then he sees, wow, this girl's really got something, you know. But that could have been a better bonding than that
weird
car transition.
We just wrote a better movie.
Transition.
Oh, we just fixed, again.
There we go.
Ninja 3.
Made it easier. All right.
Ninja 3, the relationship.
All right. We're number one. Were the cops good guys or bad guys? I never figured that out.
They're always right in the middle. It's gray area.
Okay. Because it would show them, like, hanging out with like what looked to be prostitutes, and they were always sleazing all over everything. I was like, are you not supposed to like them? Are you supposed to feel bad that he's killing them for doing their job? Or are you
at this point, you're kind of like, yeah,
right? It was tough to see.
Yes, cops.
Like, was he a good ninja or bad ninja? Because they didn't look like they were doing too much good either.
Yeah,
Billy included.
Ridiculous. Right, like, none of the cops except for Billy, who was inept and dumb
and skeezy and sleazy too. He was sleazy, hitting on her all over the police station. Yeah. Okay, good.
Hey, you look like you're a victim of a crime. You want to go out on a date later?
Yeah. Let's do it. I'm in the mood.
When you're at your absolute lowest, would you like me to help you out?
Yeah. When you come here for help, instead of helping and supporting and giving you confidence, I'd like to hit on you mercilessly.
I'm going to try and stick it in you.
Yeah, I'm going to hit on you until you can't take it anymore. Yeah, bummer.
What a jerk.
Go ahead.
If you could be a master of any ninja weapon, which one would it be?
I always thought the chain whip was super cool. Three-section staff. I'm going to go with the three-section staff.
That's an incredible weapon, but I'm going to say the straw.
With the dart in it.
The blow dart of death. So I can snorkel and then, you know, defend myself at the same time.
I would love to see you try to snorkel, hold that dart, and chew tobacco all at the same time.
Listen, I'm
great.
On vacation at Myrtle Beach. I want to go see whatever's at Myrtle Beach. So I have my snorkel. I can spit my chew out the top of that, and then when I'm attacked by a thug, I can also put in a dart and blow it out in their face.
I can't wait for you to mess that up and swallow chew and then, or swallow the dart and spit chew in their face, and you're gonna mix it all up.
Some nameless goon just got a face full of chaw.
Gross.
Great.
Okay. I don't know if I've ever told you this or not, so I figured I'd do it on the show in case I did, and then everyone can laugh at me. But did I ever tell you that when I was a kid, I thought having back hair was like the coolest thing ever, and I always prayed that I'd get a bunch of back hair? Have I told you that?
Dear God.
Yeah, I didn't tell you.
It's Steve here.
Please. Please. Just please. There was a guy that lived like four houses down from us when we were kids. And we would, you know, play catch on the outside or ride bikes. And he would come over and visit my dad. And every once in a while, he'd come over with his shirt off or a tank top. And he had hair kind of like this dude here. And, dude, it was like the manliest, like, damn, look at that dude got. Dude, he's like a gorilla, man. I thought it was the coolest thing, dude. Like, oh, man, I hope I get hair like that.
Times have changed.
Yeah, I learned quickly that's not cool.
So God never answered your prayers, you're saying?
Very little. No, very little.
What about your lower back? You ever seen those tufts of hair on guys' lower backs?
Yeah, it's all beaded up. No.
It's all like comes out of their crack.
No, I don't have that
up their
either.
Back, and it's always gross and sweaty.
Ugh, God, that's got to be painful, too. Sucks. Poor guys.
All right, man.
I mean, I'm plagued with like the eyebrow and ear and nose hair thing, just constant, dude.
Just shaving it down or plucking
it? Just constantly, dude. Just, it's a constant fighting them back. It's gross. All right, go ahead.
You know, it sucks, bro. It does. Would you rather... Okay, so I thought about this when I read it. Would you rather have your knuckles smashed by a sword made out of aluminum, rubber, or bamboo?
Okay, I have context for this. When we were at Seafood Jack's, we used to actually hit each other with little pieces of rubber hose. He used that as knives, and we used to smack each other with it. And I can 100% tell you that thing hurts. Like, because you can get a whip motion with rubber that kind of whips.
Aluminum.
No, I'm just going one by one. I'm just saying I know what rubber feels like because I've been hit by it and it hurts. So you can't discount it is all I'm saying. Because it sounds like that would be the one to go to because rubber is softer than the other two. But remember the physics of rubber. And I know bamboo also has a switching, you know, like when you swing it, it's very light and has a very, you know, a good switch to it. Aluminum probably does too. Shit. I think I'm going to go aluminum still on that.
Okay.
What are you going
with? You're going to go aluminum. I would say bamboo.
Dude, bamboo's a... Dude, that shit's strong, and it's a little bit flexible, just enough to really get on you.
My grandparents had a bamboo forest basically across the street from their house, right? Which is kind of weird. You think they wouldn't have that in the South. We used to crack that stuff down and just smack the shit out of each other with it. Oh,
dude,
yeah.
Dude, my dad told me that where the Meadows Mall is, that used to be a bamboo field.
I believe it, dude. Yeah,
that's why it's called the Meadows.
Yeah. There's a lot of it around here, so. Mm-hmm.
All right, is that me?
I think so.
All right. Socks and sandals are usually a no-no, but are they okay if you're an old Asian dude wearing a kimono?
Absolutely.
Okay, so James Hong can pull it off.
All day.
Okay.
That dude could wear a fanny pack with that outfit, and I'd be okay with it.
I think I agree. Okay. Oh, wait, so did you give me your would you rather already, or was that a different one?
No, I still have to do a would you rather.
Okay, go for it.
Would you rather golf during a ninja attack or hike during werewolf season?
Definitely golf. I feel like I got a little room to work with.
During a ninja attack?
Yes, I think I'm going golf. You?
Okay, you can hike during werewolf season. As long as it's during the day, you're fine.
Oh. I still think that golfing would be... I have more chance of a getaway than that.
I don't know, man.
Good question. I like that one. I like the ones that I can't like really.
I've seen
down.
Your ninja skills, and I've seen Shokasugis. So.
That's true. You've seen me get down. All right,
which is quite impressive.
All right, thank you. Speaking of, would you rather be a ninja or a samurai?
Ninja.
Ah, I go samurai.
I like the ninja garb, dude. I like the covered face.
Dude,
I like the you
the
know.
Samurai armor with all the cool shit on it and the big headdress.
Nope, not at all.
Oh, you're crazy.
I like to just be sneaky and get in and kill you and leave and go have breakfast.
Man. Samurai's got honor. They live by a code. Like, man.
So do ninjas.
Nah, ninjas are assassins. Ninjas are assassins, dude.
They still have a code.
The assassin's code. The code of the dark.
Whatever. They're, you clang around in your dumb armor while I just come up and slice your neck.
With the cool ponytail. Oh, that would be awesome. All right, you got a Doc Flick pick for me?
I sure do, man. It's 2015's Remember. You ever heard of that?
No, I wrote it down, though. Remember.
So Auschwitz survivor Zev is on a mission to kill the Nazi that exterminated his family during the Holocaust. The only problem is he has dementia.
Mm. So he doesn't quite follow through or what?
I'm not going to ruin it for you. It's okay. Got a good twist ending. It's okay. Got a Christopher Plummer and Martin Landau.
Nice.
It's a slow burner. Has a great twist ending. And, you know, having experience with a family member that had Alzheimer's, I thought they did a really good job of portraying his dementia and his mental disease.
Super cool, man. Good one.
Cool movie, man. It's on Amazon Prime.
Good one. Okay. I watched it. It's been a little while, but I forgot to mention it when I watched it. But me and Lynn watched an old comedy from 2002 called Orange County. Have you ever heard of it?
Hate it.
Yep. Really? Me and Lynn enjoyed it. Watched it with the wife. Was it Jack Black, Colin Hanks, Catherine O'Hara, John Lithgow? Maybe we're just in the mood for it, but we both enjoyed it. So there you go. One liked us, one didn't.
There we go.
We don't have a next up, so follow us on Twitter or Facebook. And we'll post it when we get to it. You want to do some thanks and I'll play us out?
I want to thank all our Patreon pals, our constant listeners, and new listeners, Amber and Taylor. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Buying our shirts. You guys are true road dogs.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Cool. All right. I'll play our begging promo, and then I'll get us out of here.
Awesome.
King Slayer's The Voice, proud Patreon supporter for Schlockernaut. If you get a little value out of the show and you want to give a little value back, you can support for as little as $1 a month. Every cent made goes right back into the show in order to make it better. You can follow the link at steve52.com.
Thank you, King Sledge. You can contact us at schlockernot@gmail.com. steve52.com has all the links I talked about. You could support there. You can buy a shirt, do whatever you want. The hotline is 209-STEVE-52. That was a fun one, Doc. Good pick. Thank you for doing that, and I'll catch
you
in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks, everybody.
Schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not, schlock or not, is or not, is or not, is schlock or not